If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great-tasting, high-quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers, airing weeknights at 12:35, 11:35 Central on NBC, right after The Tonight Show.
For some, the weekend is a time to rest, relax, spend time with family, but for the Trump administration, it's a time for making up fake tragedies and openly trying to blame the court system for future terror attacks. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. On Saturday, Trump faced his third weekend straight of nationwide protests, including at his Palm Beach resort in Mar-a-Lago, where he was staying. Will the protests get to Trump? Well, a longtime ally, Roger Stone, told Politico, Donald used to come and go as he pleases, and now he can't. And he has protesters on top of that. Mar-a-Lago is like an oasis for him. But if he feels he can't go there to unwind, I wonder if it will make him go crazy. Make him go crazy? Wait, has this been the sane version of Trump this whole time? What does the insane version do? Ban all people named Zach? So, based on that threat, maybe it's good that President Trump unwinds. And on Sunday, a deputy White House press secretary told CBS News, Trump has some meetings and may play a few holes of golf, which isn't a big deal. All presidents play golf. It's a presidential sport. You wouldn't want your president playing football. Though if Trump did, that would explain the concussion symptoms. What is a big deal is that Trump made it a habit of attacking Obama throughout his presidency for hitting the links with tweets like, can you believe that with all the problems and difficulties facing the U.S., President Obama spent the day playing golf? Or, while our wonderful president was out playing golf all day, the TSA is falling apart just like our government. Or this one, President Obama does nothing while bad hombres pour in through the Gulf of Mexico. Now, that last one was fake. And I have to admit that it was fake because it's totally believable he would tweet that. While there were anti-Trump protests in Mar-a-Lago, New York was brought to a standstill due to a pro-Trump rally that clogged our streets.
This is the heart of New York City. We're used to seeing protests, anti-Trump protests here in New York City, which voted overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton. But this is a pro-Trump rally. About 50 to 100 people have been here since noon.
50 to 100 people in New York City is not a rally. It's a Times Square corner. It's the line to get into Dave & Buster's. So the rollout of the travel ban has been bad. So bad, in fact, that Trump's advisors are now making up fake tragedies to try to justify it, as Kellyanne Conway did on Thursday.
I bet it's brand new information to people that President Obama had a six-month ban on the Iraqi refugee program after two Iraqis came here to this country, were radicalized, and they were the masterminds behind the Bowling Green massacre. Well, most people don't know that because it didn't get covered.
Now, if you were embarrassed you didn't remember the Bowling Green massacre, don't be. It's an incident that never happened. Like the Titanic crashing into the Hindenburg, or when Lee Harvey Oswald was shot by a unicorn. But this clip is a perfect example of the ways in which the bigger, more fantastical lies of the Trump administration overwhelm the smaller, more insidious lies. Because while everyone was focused on the made-up Bowling Green massacre, there was less attention paid to Conway's other claim that President Obama banned Iraqi refugees in 2011, a claim that is also false. Obama did initiate a new review of all roughly 57,000 Iraqi refugees who had been recently admitted into the United States in 2011. But while the flow of Iraqi refugees slowed significantly during the Obama administration's review, refugees continued to be admitted to the United States during that time. So even when they're lying, they're distracting us from other worse lies. That's like telling people you have a girlfriend in Canada when actually you have a dead body in the basement. Now, the sloppiness of the White House's rollout and shoddy defense of the travel ban has also made it more difficult to defend in court. And on Friday, a federal judge temporarily halted the ban. The White House at first issued a statement slamming the outrageous order, only to send out an updated statement 12 minutes later, deleting the word outrageous, a change that was aimed at striking a more moderate tone. And you know what? That's good to hear. The White House is trying to strike a more moderate tone. What could possibly go wrong?
This morning, President Trump tweeted, "The opinion of this so-called judge, which essentially takes law enforcement away from our country, is ridiculous and will be overturned."
What is our country coming to when a judge can halt a Homeland Security travel ban and anyone, even with bad intentions, can come into U.S.?
The judge opens up our country to potential terrorists and others that do not have our best interests at heart. Bad people are very happy.
It's impossible. Trying to strike a moderate tone with Trump as president is a little bit like trying to coyly seduce a woman with a bullhorn. "Your eyes are the color of a placid mountain lake." I repeat, your eyes are the color of a placid mountain lake. Thank you. And just in case you think the judge who halted the travel ban was some radical liberal activist, he was actually nominated by then-President George W. Bush and was unanimously confirmed by the U.S. Senate. And yet, Trump took his personal attacks to an extreme and even more dangerous level on Sunday, tweeting, "Just cannot believe a judge would put our country in such peril. If something happens, blame him and court system. People pouring in, bad." Now, it seems like Trump's real rage is he just found out there are two other branches of government. Why didn't anybody tell me this? It's in the Constitution. Where in the Constitution? All of it. Let me see that thing. Oh, no. Checks and balances. I thought it was just checks. This job stinks. So judges, protesters, and now even some Republicans are criticizing Trump. He's really taking a lot of heat on this one. If only there was someone out there willing to defend Trump at his most trying times, an ally so loyal he'd come running to the president's side no matter how many times he'd been spurned, almost in a way like a lapdog. If only there was someone out there like that.
I think the judge is wrong on this one.
And Chris Christie cannot take a hint. How can I put this to you in a way you'll understand? The bridge to Trump's heart is closed, bro. Christie went on to defend the president while also criticizing those around Trump for the haphazard way the policy was rolled out and suggesting he could do better.
The reason his opponents are able to attack him, and I believe unfairly, on the substance is because it was implemented in such a haphazard way in that first weekend. And so the president deserves better.
Don't you hear him, Donald? You deserve better. Although Christie has already delivered that message directly to Trump at the White House front door. Now, Trump has staked the entire first 2 weeks of his presidency on the supposed desire to keep bad people from harming the United States. And yet, there are apparently some actually bad people that he's totally fine with, like Vladimir Putin, as he made clear in an interview on Sunday.
Do you respect Putin?
I do respect him.
Do you? But, well, why?
Well, I respect a lot of people, but that doesn't mean I'm going to get along with him. He's a leader of his country. Will I get along with him? I have no idea.
He's a killer, though. Won't. Putin's a killer.
A lot of killers. We got a lot of killers. Why, you think our country's so innocent? You think our country's so innocent?
I don't know of any government leaders that are killers in
America. Well, take a look at what we've done, too.
Now, admitting that the U.S. has made mistakes would be fine, but that's not what Trump is doing. Instead, it sounds like he's defending Putin because he's about to get caught for the exact same thing. It's like a guy who comes home and says to his wife, "You know, a lot of guys are having affairs. That's just out there now." In a way, Trump's praise for Putin probably shouldn't come as a surprise, given Trump's own authoritarian behavior this weekend. First, he attacked an independent judge, and then he sought to discredit his political opposition by once again repeating the bogus claim that 3 million people voted illegally.
As the president, if you say, for example, that there are 3 million illegal aliens who voted, and then you don't have the data to back it up, some people are going to say that's irresponsible for a president to say that. Is there any validity
to
that? Well,
many people have come out and said I'm right. You know that.
I know, but you got to have data to back that up.
Let me just tell you. Look, Bill, we can be babies, but you take a look at the registration. You have illegals, you have dead people, you have this. It's really a bad situation.
So you think you're going to be proven correct in that statement?
Well, I think I already have. A lot of people have come out and said that I am correct.
Yeah, but the data has to show that 3 million illegals voted.
Forget that. Forget all of that.
Yeah. Forget all that. The important thing is that 3 million people died in the Bowling Green massacre, and they are all still registered to vote. A big deal. A big, big deal. Now, as for Trump's comments appearing to absolve Putin of his crimes, as usual, the task was left to vice presidential mannequin Mike Pence to make the rounds of the Sunday shows and act as if Trump had not said the thing that we all heard him say. In fact, Pence himself wouldn't even answer the question of whether the U.S. is morally superior to Russia.
What do you think America is morally superior to Russia?
What you have in this new president is someone who is willing to and is, in fact, engaging the world.
But America morally superior to Russia, yes or no?
I believe that the ideals that America has stood for throughout our history represent the highest ideals of
so
humankind.
That, shouldn't we be able to just say yes to that question, though?
I think it's without question, John.
That America is morally superior to Russia.
American ideals are superior to countries all across the world.
Before that interview, Trump definitely told Pence, don't you say Russia. You dance around it all you want, but don't you ever say it. Pence and the GOP's continued support for Trump shouldn't be surprising, but this is still a troubling time for it because we need Congress to exert some scrutiny or oversight over this president who is clearly bent on challenging and perhaps eroding the basic pillars of our democracy, a point made forcefully by Bernie Sanders on Sunday.
I would hope that people like Senator McConnell and other Republicans have the courage to stand up, A, to Trump's movement toward authoritarianism, toward a situation where Trump says, everybody is terrible and wrong. I am the only guy who can protect the American people. We are a democracy, not a one-man show. We are not another Trump enterprise. It's called the United States of America. We're not a business run by Mr. Trump.
And you can tell we're not a business run by Donald Trump because, at least for now, we're still open. This has been A Closer Look.
The Late Night Podcast is available every Wednesday and Friday on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you like what you hear, please take a moment to leave us a rating and review. Now, back to the show.
Our first guest tonight is an Emmy-winning journalist who hosts Anderson Cooper 360 weeknights on CNN. He is the co-author of the New York Times bestseller The Rainbow Comes and Goes, A Mother and Son on Life, Love, and Loss, which is out now in paperback. Please welcome back to the show our friend Anderson Cooper, everybody. Welcome back.
Thanks. Great to be here.
So this is so much fun. Last time we were here, you were talking about how interesting it was writing a book with your mother.
Yes.
You wrote it over email a lot.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
My mom and I don't actually like to see each other, so it was easier that way.
But now you actually are doing press together.
We did press when the book first came out. My mom turned 93, actually, at the end of February, so.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's very strange. But, it's weird, though, doing press with your mom, like, as you well know.
Yeah.
But, you know, you discover all these things about this person who you never, like, my mom, and also at age now 93, she has no filter anymore. I mean, she never really had a filter. Like, as a child, she told me early on that the first time she didn't fake an orgasm was with Howard Hughes. I was like...
do with that what you will,
I know, I
Anderson.
Was like, I know, I was like, you know, and I was 10 at the time, which was inappropriate. But so I was at Andy Cohen's show, Watch What Happens Live. He was going to interview my mom and me. And my mom had never seen his show.
Right.
And so I told her a little bit about it while we were in the green room. And she turned to me and she said, he's not going to ask me who had the biggest in Hollywood, is he? I know. I was like, who are you?
Yeah.
Just like, who, what?
Yeah.
Like, please never say that word to me again. And then Andy comes in, and I turned to Andy. I said, she wants to know if you're going to ask her who had the biggest in Hollywood. And Andy was like, can I ask who had the biggest in Hollywood?
Based on the previous story, Howard Hughes, I'm going to guess. But she has, she...
Oh, and then we did an interview with Jess Cagle, you know, from People Magazine Entertainment Week. And he has this, like, online thing, and he was interviewing us. And it's called the Cagle exercise, which is...
Yeah.
Yeah. So my mom was like, I don't want to do a Cagle exercise. I was like, oh, my God. Like, went to my special place. But in the middle of the interview, she suddenly revealed that she'd had a lesbian fling when she was in high school. I was like, what?
Yeah. And you'd just written a book.
I know. I was like, you could have put that in the friggin' book. I was like, the subject did come up in the book, you know. Like, that would have been a good time to mention it.
But she likes Andy Cohen.
She loves Andy Cohen.
By the way, this speaks to, because your mother is, to a degree, ageless, not just by her vocabulary, but she, like,
yes.
She has an elegance.
Yeah, she's,
but,
yes.
But I like that I heard that she referred to Andy not as the son she never had, as the brother.
Yeah, as the brother she never had, which I was like, that's weird. And but all throughout my childhood, actually, my mom would refer to people as her, like, fantasy daughter. Like, she always, when I was a kid, referred to Cher as her fantasy daughter. Like, Cher from Sonny and Cher. So as a kid, I was like, is Cher my sister? I don't. So now I met Cher actually on Andy's show. And so Cher now texts me. She's like, hey, little bro. So I told her the story. That's my Cher.
There you go. Yeah. That's a really good show.
No, it's not a very good
show. It is. I will say, I think I'm not alone of the people in this room who thought, that's a better Cher than I thought Anderson would be.
It's like, hey, you little bro, emoji, clap.
I'm jealous. I was always jealous that your mom was Gloria Vanderbilt, but now I'm jealous that you're friends with Cher.
Well, yes, it's you know, Cher watches a lot of news, actually.
Yes, she really does.
No, and she does amazing things. Like, during Hurricane Katrina, I did a report about somebody who was feeding people just out of her own pocket, and Cher, like, called me up, and she was like, and I, at that point, I had never even met her. She was like, I'd like to donate a lot of money to that person. And, you know, she didn't make a big deal of it or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, so. she is a classy lady. That's
she
nice
used to call up C-SPAN. I had never actually saw this, but I heard reports. She used to call up C-SPAN at, like, 3 a.m. and, like, for call-ins to C-SPAN. And she'd be like, I'm calling from Malibu. And the person would be like, the anchor would be like, is this Cher?
That's amazing. Yeah. By the way, it's not like there's a lot of hot calls coming into C-SPAN. She's calling a lot if they're bummed out. Yeah. And you, obviously, you work on TV now. You were a guest on talk shows all the time. But thanks to your mother, you were you appeared on a talk show at a very young age.
I did. I was on the Mike Douglas show.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember the Mike
Douglas
show.
Like, barely, sure.
What? It was a big... That was a good booking.
Yeah.
So I was on the Mike Douglas show, but I wasn't on with my mom or anything. I was, like, 10 years old at the time. I was on with some friend of my mom's who, for some reason, had costumes of the Munchkins from the original Wizard of Oz and needed a kid. So he asked my mom if I would go on the Mike Douglas show with him wearing one of the costumes of the Munchkins. So I got all excited, and I told everyone in my school that I was going to be on the Mike Douglas show. Only when it actually aired, there was some sort of, like, snow emergency or something in the city, and they cut my segment from, not even my segment, the old guy's segment, and I'm just the little kid in the costume. They cut the segment, so everyone in my school thought I was lying about being a Munchkin on the Mike Douglas show.
Which is such a terrible lie.
Which was such a lame lie. Yeah. And then, ironically, the next year, in fourth grade, my school did a production of The Wizard of Oz, and I got cast as the mayor of Munchkin.
Oh, well, there you go. So it was helpful.
Yes.
It was very helpful. By the way, like, you lived the life that I thought every New York kid lived. Which
I
is
did.
Like,
that is
and
true.
Then your mother's friend comes and puts you on television.
Right, yeah. Right. It's like, oh, Charlie Chaplin's coming to the house. Literally.
Met Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, yeah. No.
And
yeah.
So this is a photo of you and Charlie Chaplin. How old is, you were what?
Charlie Chaplin had been in exile for most of his life.
Yeah.
Because he had to flee the United States, or leave the United States. And this was his first return to receive a Special Academy Award. And my mom threw him a party. And that's little me. I wore costumes my entire childhood. So this is me, I don't know, in sort of a pirate outfit. I'm not really sure. And that's Charlie Chaplin. And I was disappointed because he looked nothing like I had been prepped for.
Yeah.
You know?
That is not, I would not, if you showed me this photo, I would not have guessed Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah. I know. I'm always like, who's that lady, too?
Yeah. Like, that's who you want to know.
Right. Yeah. But I thought it was totally normal as a kid. Like, my mom took me to Studio 54 when I was 11.
Yeah.
You know, not...
It's a good book.
Yeah, it's an interesting book.
I want to talk about your day job, night job, because right now, obviously, you are dealing with the president.
Sure.
We all are, but he is specifically calling the media the opposition party.
Right.
And he talks all the time about how much he hates CNN and how
right.
bad CNN
right.
is.
He calls CNN fake news.
Fake news.
Right, yeah.
But yet you get the feeling he's watching a lot of CNN.
Oh, no. He watches CNN all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I this is not in dispute at all. And because he has texted about people I'm interviewing while I'm interviewing them.
Yeah.
He would do that during the campaign. And then there's, you know, it's on in his offices. Certainly at Trump Tower, it was on a lot. And I know, yeah, he watches. He watches more cable news than, he watches me on CNN probably more than my mom
yeah.
watches me on CNN.
And even though, look, cable news is very helpful, but there is a place where you can maybe watch too much cable news.
Yeah, I mean, you would think at a certain point, I mean, look, I appreciate the, you know, I mean, if he had a Nielsen box, it'd be even better. But,
right.
you know, but at a certain point, you would think, like, there's got to be something more important going on at, you know, for the president to be doing than flicking around the shows. But,
but
I don't know.
You you covered this last night. There was a New York Times article that talked about how he would watch television in his bathrobe. And
yes.
then Sean Spicer disputed that he had a bathrobe.
This is literally... We ended up doing a segment with a reporter from the New York Times,
yeah.
Maggie Haberman, who co-wrote the story, who's a great reporter. And I actually thought it was a fascinating article because I thought it really humanized Donald Trump and was kind of a fascinating...
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't
Absolutely.
Snarky or anything.
It was not.
And it was just a minor detail that he had watched television sometimes in a bathrobe. Sean Spicer, on the plane on Air Force One, said he probably doesn't even own a bathrobe, but he certainly doesn't wear a bathrobe. So we had the reporter on whose sourcing was like... I know he wears a bathrobe sometimes in the White House. And then we found old pictures of him dressed in a bathrobe.
Yeah.
So, and I had this entire segment conversation with Maggie Haberman about a bathrobe and the president. And literally, at some point, I said to her, like, this is surreal that you and I are
yeah.
sitting here talking about.
Do you think that's the Jedi construction he has where... Ultimately, if he can get us talking about whether or not he has a bathrobe, he's winning.
No, I don't think he wants us talking about the bathrobe.
Yeah, I don't think
because, you know, I don't think the bathrobe is sort of the look he's going for.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I wouldn't want to be photographed or seen in a bathrobe.
No.
I don't really like bathrobes.
No one
either.
Really looks good in bathrobes.
No one can pull.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm sure, like, Giselle looks great in a bathrobe.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if you like that sort of thing.
Yeah,
but, yes.
Yeah.
Most guys, I would say,
yeah,
do not look great.
Most guys don't look, yeah, great.
Guess,
and
yeah.
then, how, because you have, up to this point, you know, a White House, a president that's very, feels free to antagonize the press, has it changed the way you cover it, or is it pretty much just the same with a different subject?
It's pretty much the same. Look, I mean, it's not as if the Obama White House was the most welcoming to the media.
I think people have forgotten that.
Yeah, the president stopped talking to me after the BP oil spill. I used mm-hmm. to interview him a fair amount, and then I spent 2 months in New Orleans just focusing on BP oil spill, and I guess they didn't like it because I never got an interview with him again, I think until right before he left office. So that's, you know, it's when I don't want to be buddy-buddies with any of these people. Now, I'm just talking about the Trump administration. I don't go to the White House for social events.
Yeah.
I don't hang out with these people.
Well,
socially.
I think it's important that the public is in a better place if the president should hate the press. Not maybe to this level, but the press should be irritating to
yeah,
the president.
Look, our job is to, you know, ask tough questions of,
yeah.
of all sides and to be fair. But, you know, it is, I think, inappropriate for the president to be calling certainly CNN fake news. I mean,
sure.
Kellyanne Conway was on CNN today and said, you know, Jake Tapper asked her, is it fake news? And she said, no, it's not. So... Particularly on subjects that, I mean, that whole came about because of our reporting, CNN's reporting by a number of great people, including Jake Tapper, on the president being briefed by intelligence
sure.
officials about this two-page summary. Anyway, our reporting was 100% correct. They claimed it was all fake, and they were wrong. I mean...
Well, we're very lucky that people like you and your network are staying on it. So thank you so much for being here.
Good to be here.
Anderson Cooper, everybody. The Rainbow Comes and Goes, available now. And everyone in the audience is getting a copy. We'll be right back. Our first guest tonight is an Emmy-nominated actress who recently won the Golden Globe for her performance as Dr. Rainbow Johnson in the hit ABC sitcom Black-ish. Please welcome back to the show, Tracee Ellis Ross, everybody. How are you?
Hi.
First and foremost, congratulations on your Golden Globe. So well deserved. You looked so beautiful that night.
Gotta make out with the globe.
Well, you have, you know, after you win, you have to take all these pictures with it, and ultimately there are only so many things you can do with the globe.
But you know who taught me how to do that?
Who's that?
Derig.
Oh, Derig. I know he does some photo work as well.
Yeah, it's speakers and photos. Yeah.
He's a posing technician.
Unbelievable.
Well, I want to ask, what was it, were you, what went through your head when you won, when you heard your
Apparently
name?
Apparently this.
Yeah.
Like, froze for a second, and then I kept thinking, get your butt up on that stage because you can't get the music.
Right. And did you feel good? Did you feel like you executed and thanked everybody you wanted to thank? Were you?
I did. I felt like, I mean, at the end, when I started seeing Wrap It Up, I got so uncomfortable. I kept thinking of that Dave Chappelle sketch.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, God, you got to wrap it up, woman. And then I was like, Mom, Dad, rah! Yeah.
Yeah.
And started screaming stuff out. But I had said what I wanted to say at the beginning. I mean, I can't believe all that came out of my mouth, but yes.
And your mom, Diana Ross, had won this award.
My mom is Diana Ross.
Yeah, yeah.
Got it!
I know. Oh, my God. We were going to tell you with a sex cake
is it
later. I blew it.
Diana Ross, isn't that the late? Oh.
Yeah. But she won a Golden Globe in 1973.
44 years ago, and yeah. I'm 44.
Wow.
Isn't that neat?
That's so great.
You know what I can't figure out? I keep looking, but it's hard to search it, because a lot of things come up. But has there ever been a mother-daughter that's won a Golden Globe? I don't know. Do you know that answer?
It would be so weird if I did.
Okay.
If I was like, yes, 1981, like that I'm a crazy, like, I'm a Rain Man for Golden Globes.
However, Fred might know.
Fred might know, Fred.
Yes.
And did you call your mom? Did you get to call her?
Okay, so I left the stage. I went back in the press room. By the time I made it back to my seat, and I'm one of those people who likes to clear all the text messages and make sure.
Yes, right, of course. You're not a monster.
My phone had 260 text messages.
That?
I was so stressed out.
First of all, that is so heartbreaking. I would have to win 100 Golden Globes to get two. 260? I don't have 260 friends.
I think people haven't spoken to you for ages. They're like, I hope this is still you. Congrats. But I called my mom, and she was so thrilled and excited and screaming. Then I called my dad, and he was like, oh, I'm so exhausted. He goes, I had to call the super. They couldn't get me off the ceiling. He was, like, up on the ceiling.
He was very happy
It was very exciting.
I was very impressed with this. You pulled off a costume change.
Sure, you got to do that.
So this is you at the party, which
is with
great.
Another pose.
With another pose.
Again,
daring.
I'm telling you. So
one of the fun things of all these parties, win or lose, you get to meet a lot of other people.
Oh.
But when you win and you've got a globe, that's kind of, I feel like, permission to go say hi to anybody.
I did a lot of that.
Okay, good.
I mean, I was bold and ridiculous. And I met Trevante, who played have you seen Moonlight?
Fantastic.
Okay, so I met Trevante, who's a charming and beautiful gentleman.
So Trevante is the oldest of
he was the third.
Right.
And I met him earlier, and then I saw him at a party, and I noticed that he was struggling with his bow tie with a friend of his, it seemed, trying to get it off. He was ready to loosen up.
Sure,
as
of course.
Were. And so I was trying, I thought, well, let me help him. So, of course. So I went to help him, and we struggled, and then two other friends came over, and we were really struggling to get it off, and then I walked away, and I looked back over, and they were still struggling, and I was like, oh, forget it. I'm just going to go over there and rip him out of it. Take him out. So I go over there, and I'm like, trying to get him out. We finally get him out, and I release him, and I put my hand on his shoulder, and I was like, this is definitely not the way the fantasy went in my head. There were not this many people around. But it's pretty good.
If he thought you were a weirdo, it did not show. Although I'm
this was the earlier picture.
I was gonna say, the bow tie's on. So if there was one with the bow tie later, that was probably him.
Anyway, it was a great night. It was special and fabulous.
And congratulations on the show. Black-ish is such a wonderful show.
Thank you.
And that clip, you guys deal with social issues very well on the show, and you received a lot of credit, rightfully so, for how fast you turned around an episode about the family on the show dealing with the election.
Yeah.
Is it exciting, thrilling to work on a show that adjusts to real life so quickly?
I think it's fantastic. I think our writing is exceptional. We have an extraordinary room of writers that are very willing to courageously kind of lean into what's happening. And somehow they find this beautiful balance between being hilarious and really real and deep on some of this stuff. I mean, that episode, the election episode, was heavy. You know,
it really was.
It was. I mean, there was some humor in it. My character is sort of struggling and is covered, has been literally donating everywhere possible and is covered in, like, Covenant House and DNC, like, Black Lives Matter. She has literally, like, everything. Her upset and confusion is, like, all over the outside of her body. But there, we dealt with a lot of heavy stuff, and I think...
And, you know, which I think was... most impressed about it, different points of view.
Yeah. Like
there was a real effort to, I think, explore the
all
fact.
All sides.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that our show is very good at, is not saying this is what you should believe about anything, because we've dealt with police brutality. We've dealt with gun control and sex. I mean, you know, all these different things across the board that come up. And we don't say this is one point of view or this is what it should be. It's actually us exploring a different way of thinking. It starts with, like, a limited idea and kind of expands itself.
Well, it's a really nice show about a family having a conversation, and I feel like conversations
we
don't have a lot. Yeah, I think they're what we need. So congratulations on the show. Congratulations on the Golden Globe.
Thank
Always
you.
So great to have you
it's
back
so
here.
So good to see you.
Gracie Allen Schwartz, everybody. Blackish airs Wednesday nights on ABC.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. Thanks for listening.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.